The 46th commemoration of Earth Day is coming up on this Friday, on April 22nd. It's a day to celebrate and to bring our awareness back once again to our beautiful planetary home. It's also a time to raise our consciousness about the impact of human greed and consumption on the land, sea, and air, and upon the other life forms with whom we share our only world. Earth Day reminds us to recommit ourselves to taking some meaningful action to help slow the devastation of global climate change. And there will be events, Earth Day celebrations, all across the country. And today in Balboa Park, there is a celebration from 10 to 5 with festivities and exhibits and a parade and things for kids. Our opening song this morning was a chant inviting us to envision the earth metaphorically as our mother, our source of life. The earth is our mother, we must take care of her, the song goes. It's a lovely song. I learned it first in seminary. But recently I've come to realize there's a little bit of a problem with the philosophical stance of that comparison. I think it highlights our delusion that humans are a discrete, disconnected, and distinct from one another and from Earth. As if once we evolved into being, we now have a subject-object relationship, as if Earth is something other than who we are, when in fact, we are of the same substance, and our health and well-being, our very existence, continues to be directly correlated with Earth's health and well-being. We cannot do anything to Earth without doing it also to ourselves. True that we have learned to fly, and we speed along freeways in computerized machines, and thermostats control our environment, and we have created and run our own human economy. All of this reinforces our illusion that we have somehow risen above the natural world. We've conquered it. But then when we occasionally need a break from this imitation world that we have created, we get into our cars and we go out into nature. This is a paradigm that has gotten us into this current mess that we're in. The truth is, we are not living upon the earth. We are of the earth. Our bodies eat sunlight the same way every other living being eats sunlight to survive. The word animal comes from a Latin root that means breath, soul, life force, or spirit. Long ago, people believed that soul was the mysterious force that gave life and breath to all of Earth's creatures. And yet, when we say the word animal, we usually don't mean to include people. We think of people as somehow different, something other. And our capacity for abstract thinking is what separates us. Once our frontal lobes evolved to be able to consider not just the things that we encounter in our day-to-day experience, but our ideas about the things that we encounter, we took a step away from the rest of the animal kingdom. And I think in the process of the evolution of consciousness, we have lost touch with something. As the area of our brains responsible for language and planning and problem solving has grown in size over time, we have relied less and less on our intuition, our direct perception of truth. Consider the sixth sense that we easily attribute to animals. Do you remember the stories of the elephants that broke through their chains a full hour before the tsunami hit in Thailand? Or think of those stories that we so often hear on the news of a dog that had been left someplace and thought was going to be gone forever, but somehow managed to find its way hundreds, sometimes thousands of miles away. It would seem that this mysterious ability to simply know things beyond the experiences of our five senses is part of our biological makeup as well. As Albert Einstein once said, "The intuitive mind is a sacred gift, and the rational mind is a faithful servant." We have created a society that honors the servant and has forgotten the gift. spoken language and abstract thinking have lifted us to new heights. But when we privilege them, they also function as a sort of barrier to our felt sense of connection to and embeddedness within the natural world. This is why one of the greatest gifts that animals give us is they invite us into a world of nonverbal communication. Developing a relationship with an animal, whether it's a pet dog or a cat or a horse, it helps to reconnect with our own essential animal nature. When we have interactions with creatures outside of our species, it helps to put the human race into perspective. When we step into their world, when we allow our imagination to experience life with four legs and furry skin, or feathers and the ability to ride on the wind, we begin to glimpse a greater truth, that humanity is not separate or above the rest of creation. We get a little hint of our own innate wildness, our creatureliness. We remember to let, as Mary Oliver put it, the soft animal of our body love what it loves. The last of our seven Unitarian Universalist principles is respect for the interdependent web of existence of which we are a part. We hear those words often enough, or we see them printed, but I'm not sure we've taken time to consider their profundity. Because it sounds to me like it is an acknowledgement that humanity is not above or in any way separate from the rest of creation. And if that is indeed what we mean, that's a pretty radical break from the Jewish and Christian theology that teaches that God granted man dominion over the birds and the beasts. To speak of an interdependence of existence sounds to me like a mystical stance, one that embraces mystery and wonder. So if this is true, then it seems somehow more fitting to use the word reverence rather than respect. I think it would be more accurate for the seventh principle to read reverence for the interdependent web of existence of which we are a part. By changing that one word, we sink down out of our intellect into the wonder and astonishment at humanity's interdependence with all that exists. We feel a sense of awe at the thought that on a very essential, energetic level, we are all comprised of the same elements and mostly space. And all of that stuff, all life, came from the belly of stars. We are all star stuff. There is a refreshing quality to the simplicity of animals' lives. Dolphins and seagulls do not concern themselves with the presidential race. Rabbits and coyotes couldn't care less if you have to file yet another extension on your taxes. Their imperviousness to the anxiety and concerns of our species can help us have a bit of a wider perspective. From them, we can learn to relax into our lives, trust a little more, and not take ourselves and our life situations quite so seriously. This is a true story that I want to tell you. On a Sunday morning in December of 2005, a crab fisherman was working on his boat in the open ocean just east of the Farallon Islands. These are about 18 miles off the coast of San Francisco. When he suddenly spotted a whale that had become entangled in the nylon ropes that link crab pots. The whale turned out to be a female humpback, about 45 to 50 feet long, and they guessed it weighed about 50 tons. The whale had become snared in the ropes while she was migrating between Northern California coast and Baja California. So the fishermen called it in, and a rescue team was put together quickly. By 2:30 that afternoon, the rescuers had found the whale and evaluated the situation and agreed that the poor whale was so badly tangled up in the crab pot lines that the only way to save her was to dive beneath the surface and cut the nylon ropes that were ensnaring her. James Mosquito was one of the rescue divers, and these are his words. I was the first diver in the water, and my heart sank when I saw all the lines wrapped around the whale. I really didn't think we were going to be able to save it. The rope was wrapped at least 4 times around the tail, the back, and the left front flipper, and there was a line in the whale's mouth. The crab pot lines were cinched so tight that the rope was digging into the animal's skin and blubber and leaving visible cuts. At least 12 crab traps weighing 90 pounds each hung off the whale. The combined weight was pulling her downward, forcing her to struggle mightily to keep her blowhole out of the water so she could breathe. 4 divers spent about an hour that afternoon underwater cutting the nylon ropes with a special curved knife. This was a very dangerous job, considering that the whale with a single flip of her tail could easily have killed any one of them. But the whale didn't struggle. In fact, she cooperated. One diver said the whale floated passively in the water the whole time, giving off a strange kind of vibration. When I was cutting the line going through the mouth, her eye was there, winking at me, watching me. It was an epic moment of my life. Eventually, they were able to free the whale. They said that when the whale realized it was free, it began swimming around in circles. It swam up to each diver, nuzzled him, and then swam to the next one. One rescuer said, "It felt to me like it was thanking us, knowing that it was free and that we had helped it. It stopped about a foot away from me, pushed me around a little, and had some fun. It seemed kind of affectionate, like a dog that's happy to see you. I never felt threatened. It was an amazing, unbelievable experience." Another diver said, "You hate to anthropomorphize too much, but the whale was doing these little dives, and the guys were rubbing shoulders with it. I don't know for sure what it was thinking, but it's something that I will always remember. It was just too cool." So who was blessing who in this story? Certainly the whale owes her life to the divers who cut her loose, but those men will probably never forget how it felt to have a 50-ton wild animal playfully nuzzling them in the open sea. When we bring a sense of curiosity and openness to our interactions with animals, we cannot help but be moved to a sense of awe and wonder. Looking into their eyes, can we not see there, underneath the layers of custom and culture, a commonality, an undeniable kindredness? Does not the spark of the divine, this enlivening soul that we speak of seeing in one another, burn as brightly in all creatures? When we grow in that appreciation of our mutuality, how can we rightfully think of ourselves as owners of any living thing? And how can we continue to think of the earth as just a place where we happen to live, as if there were other options? So as we engage in Earth Day celebrations and actions this coming week, let us also remember to celebrate our own animal nature, our embeddedness in the life-sustaining system of this little blue planet. Let the howls of the coyotes and the calls of the wild geese remind us of our place in the family of things. Amen and blessed be.